Visit our website at BostonBastardBrigade.com for recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the B3 crew.
Become friends with us on MySpace at MySpace.com/BostonBastardBrigade, as well as on Facebook. You can even find our Twitter accounts on our official homepage.
And don't forget to check out our friends at the Electric Sisterhood at ESH.MOBI for another side of news and review, including their own glorious podcast show.
From the North Virginia suburbs and near Philly do they ride. One, he has a goatee and a six-string by his side. The other packs a keyboard and sarcasm finely honed. The two men ride together into the great unknown. They are not seeking justice, they've got no wrongs to right. They're just here to sing some dick jokes and head off into the night. In rental vans and airplanes, they travel across the land. With songs of nuns and pirates, they are the opening band. Paul and Storm,
Paul and Storm,
Paul and Storm,
Paul and Storm.
La 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 la. Paul and Storm,
Paul and Storm,
Paul and Storm,
Paul and Storm.
Please no flash photography of Paul and Storm.
Yeah.
Joining us today at PAX East are two wonderful performers who will be performing tomorrow night in the main event stage. Please welcome Paul and Storm.
Hey, hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm back here.
What some people might not know about Paul and Storm is that you two started out in an a cappella group called Da Vinci's Notebook.
Yes.
So what makes you two decide to go on your own as a duo during the group's, quote, Mark C. Ruva style hiatus?
Which is exactly what it was.
Yeah, well, it still is a Mark C. Ruva style hiatus.
What the hell is Mark C. Ruva?
It's anyway. A band from Canada that they were sort of, there's a continuum of acts that goes from Mark C. Ruva and Da Vinci's Notebook and up through Jonathan Coulton's sort of smart, good music, fun type music.
Yes.
I think I used the word music five times. They're a music band.
It's okay.
Music band that plays music.
Music band that plays music.
And has music while they're playing music.
But we started this because the other band ended, so we didn't want to do something other than...
Didn't want to get real jobs.
No.
So you couldn't picture yourself in front of a computer going 9 to 5.
Well, we could. That's why we wanted to do this instead.
We'd already seen that.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
Yeah. Now, you have the song Opening Band, where you sing with pride about how great it is to be on before the headliner, but what I wonder is what happens, or what's going to happen to this song when it's your turn to be the headliner?
Well, we've run into that. Sometimes we are the headliner, and we don't care, because we're rock and roll.
That's right. We dedicate it to the opening act, then, if it's...
Yeah.
Oh, that's really nice.
Mm-hmm. It's nice of them.
Because we've been there.
Right.
We've definitely been there.
No, I think we were talking before the interview, and I was like, maybe they pay homage and they let the opening band chill and drink their beer because they know just how rough it is.
Yeah.
And in fact, I don't want to give away any secrets, but we've never really had a band that we thought were complete douchebags.
No. So far.
That's good.
It's kind of apocryphal.
Well, Colton's not a band. He's a douchebag, but he's not a band.
Right. But so we never had...
Well, God, that's don't get me started on the Proto-Man. Man. Good God. Yeah, could you play your music a little louder over there on those speakers, please? God.
Anarchy is happening.
We're trying to record a podcast here.
Oh, sorry. Never mind. I won't make any more noise. Sorry, guys.
God, go away.
Go fart in the corner over there, okay?
All right, so we were talking about douchebags.
Yes.
Back to these poignant parts of the conversation.
What is up with these douchebags?
Yeah.
Now, one of your show's many highlights, I think, is your medley of Frogger.
Yeah.
The Frogger musical. Now, have you ever considered going one step further and actually putting together a Frogger musical production, or at least for one act?
I'd say yes-ish. Maybe not Frogger per se. Maybe not anytime soon per se. But the idea of doing things like that, perhaps. Maybe with frogs, maybe...
Besides, Q-Bert really lends itself more to a two-act musical.
I wasn't going to tip our hand on that. But yeah, because, you know, first come the balls, then come the snakes, and then come the balls and the snakes. There's a lot more variation.
Did this conversation just change?
I think so.
When a man and a woman love each other very much.
My dad told me about the balls and snakes last night.
Come here, Jimmy. Let me tell you about the balls and the snakes. Jimmy, have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Moving on.
I think we turned the wrong corner there.
Airplane. It's an airplane.
Tangent. Yeah. Let's turn around.
Now, let's be honest. Did you know as soon as you wrote it that the captain's wife's lament was going to be as popular as it is now?
We honestly did not. That actually, we used to sing that song. That was one of the last songs we wrote for Da Vinci's Notebook. And we used to sing it straight ahead, you know, like 2.5 minutes. And it was all just about the one stupid pun over and over.
Yeah.
And the whole intro section, we just sort of blew through it. And I don't remember exactly when it started, when we started lengthening that.
Well, in Da Vinci's Notebook, we used to do the Irish drinking song. And that one, it was similar in terms of how we played it, where it was mostly about, it wasn't R, but it was another thing that we would encourage people to shout out. Yeah. It would turn into a 40-minute death march. And
I believe you can actually find an old clip of that on YouTube.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. So, yeah, I don't remember when, but it was sort of the same idea. An opportunity to have fun with the
audience. Yeah, we just started saying, you know, what I think just once we realized, probably the audience, somebody in the audience just shouted out R at some point. And us being the whores that we are for audience attention, we're like, oh, let's play with this toy. And it got longer and longer and longer and longer.
And nerds love pirates, or at least they like shouting R.
So. Yep.
Pirates and or ninjas or aliens.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or time travelers.
But pirates are the only ones that really have that specific sound
signature
allocated to them.
True.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what do ninjas do? They're quiet.
That's not even. You don't even hear them.
Right.
It's just death.
You just die. And we don't want to do that to our audiences most of the time.
Pretty awesome to do once, though. You can only do it once, but it would be pretty cool.
Not going
to
say we're not going to kill one of our audiences sometime. Maybe tonight.
You could always plan it, like make a big killing.
Right, like a flash massacre.
Yes.
Flash Massacre is the name of my. Oh, it's not working. I got a day to get up on this.
Flash, cover man name?
Flash Massacre.
Judas Priest,
is
come on.
Yeah, name of my Judas Priest. Yeah, there we go. See?
Give me some time.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Now, see, it's funny, since you bring up the whole geek thing, what would you consider yourself, a nerd or a geek?
Personally, I am, I would say, 40% geek, 40% nerd, 5% dork, and 5% other.
That leaves 10%.
10% other.
I consider myself more a geek than a nerd because my own personal definition of a geek is a nerd with social skills. Like a geek, I can picture a geek as an enthusiast as opposed to a nerd, which I picture as sort of an obsessive enthusiast.
So I think of nerd as sort of more, maybe I'm a bit backwards, but more geared towards science and practical things, where geek for me is almost more cultural and the enthusiasm. So I think we may be using the terms differently.
Yeah.
And of course, nerds have a passion for vengeance against the jocks.
Absolutely they do.
Sorry, I had to stand. The coup
Robert,
is walking
Robert
by.
Koo has just walked.
Who is that?
It was Robert Koo. He's in charge of everything here.
Oh. Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah, you want an audience massacre to happen?
Yeah, that's Koo's the guy. Koo's the guy we got to get approval from to get the massacre. Okay.
Now, have you ever wondered what became of the nuns from your nun fight song?
No, we know.
Oh, you do?
We absolutely know. Yeah. Yeah, they were killed in a car crash.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm very punchy right now.
I haven't been asleep a long time. Way to bring it down.
Sorry.
It's comedy podcast.
No, there's something else going on in my head, and that's the thing that came out, and I don't know why.
I was expecting strip club or cockfighting, but car crash was the last thing I could
do. No, now they're Jewish nuns.
How does that even work?
I don't know exactly, but they're Jewish nuns.
They're feeling more guilt.
Yeah, sort of a splinter group of Judaism.
Yeah.
Believes in boxing and nuns.
Now you tour and collaborate a lot with Jonathan Coltrane, with the two parties going back and forth, with helping out with songs and backing vocals. Where did this friendship originate from?
Or rivalry? Maybe.
We stalked him on the internet. Actually, we found him. We did find him on the internet because that's where he grew up. He knew, you know, he's old friends with John Hodgman, and he was on a recording that Hodgman did of his 700 hobo names, and finding that link led us to his site when he was pretty early in the Thing a Week project.
Before he was famous, really.
It was like pre-Code Monkey. But it was post Baby Got Back, pre-Code Monkey.
And certainly pre-Portal song.
Yeah, and we were, you know, we were still relatively early in our duo phase, and we were looking for like-minded individuals to do some shows with, and we just emailed him and did a show in New York, and it worked pretty well, and did a few more shows, and then we introduced him to our booking agent, because we were the seasoned road veterans who knew how to do live touring, and he was the guy who knew how to make the internet your friend and to propagate your brand.
So there was a beneficial...
Exactly.
Yeah, a symbiosis, if you will.
Mm-hmm. You scratch my back, I'll scratch
yours. Yes, we were the birds, and he was the crocodile with shit in his teeth.
Yeah. We're the beneficial parasite.
Yeah.
Now, a couple years back, from what I remember, you guys actually were on... You didn't have your own show, but you were guests from time to time on Air America Radio. I remember, I believe, the Stephanie Miller show.
Oh, wow.
You did the Barry Bonds song, if I recall.
Oh, did we
appear on that show ever? Did she just play our thing? Wow, that's going way back. I don't know.
Bob and Tom, that was certainly...
I remember them contacting... I remember some people from Air America contacting us and asking us to play stuff. Well, but we'll go on faith that we... did that show.
How did you become friends with the people Air America, like Stephanie Miller, and like, I don't know if you ever met Al Franken or...
No, I have no recollection of that, to be honest. So it may have just been she heard a song of ours on the radio
and asked
to play it.
I do remember now. I remember when, you know, you Google yourself as you do, and remember seeing her website and us in association with that.
Yeah, so. You have to understand, we meet so many famous people. It's hard to keep track anymore.
Yep.
No, I'm sure that was just a, you know, that's, you know, yet again, the internet, just sort of things finding their way through different pathways to people.
Yeah, no, I remember now. I remember the series of emails where she had just sort of found our music and thought it was really, really awesome. And we're like, oh, cool, you know, please, yes, play it, please.
Nice. That's cool, because I didn't know at the time that it was you too, but after doing some like research, I realized, oh my god, I remember this song, and I remember hearing it years back when Barry Bonds was still on playing baseball and taking steroids, and back when his penis was still tiny.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have no verification these days as to its current size.
Oh, but everybody loved the tiny Barry Bonds penis. I think that really...
Isn't that the name of his children's show he was trying to get started?
Really, really united America at a critical time.
Now, you're performing tomorrow, and I remember last year you had MC Funnelon come on stage to guest with you.
Yes.
But all you really had him do was just stare into the abyss. Like, just stare right into the crowd and do nothing in a very creepy manner. What I wonder is, are you going to be having him collaborate with you guys again tomorrow, or...
You know, we don't...
We haven't really...
Crazy shit just happens here at PAX as showtime approaches. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a Steve Martin-esque kind of thing to do, like that kind of humor. So, can expect something like that, if it's not exactly that.
Excellent.
Have you had any great experiences at this PAX, or maybe even last year's PAX East, since these are the first two that have ever hit the East Coast?
They're great, period. Really, our first PAX, which was 2 years ago now, was sort of a real eye-opener for us. Like Jonathan had been telling us for a couple of years, oh, PAX, it's amazing, and the vibe there, and it's not like other conventions, it's really well-organized, and everybody's such a good time. And we were an almost complete unknown the first time. And after we had our main stage performance, it was like the whole place just hugged us. So,
it was kind of uncomfortable, but cool.
Yeah, suffocating.
So it was a creepy uncle hug.
Yeah, when like 60,000 people hug you at once.
And then they all pulled like a quarter out from our ear.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, we made a lot of money from that.
Yeah.
Wow.
To wipe the wax off of it. But.
Yeah. Now, seeing as we're here at PAX East, I know it's just been the first day, but I believe you guys also went to GDC last week, right?
No, it wasn't us.
Oh. Someone lied to me.
Quick, to the time machine.
But I don't know if you've had a chance to check out the floor yet, but I want to know, what games have you seen so far that have just blown your mind away?
Or, in true, are you guys even really of the gamer variety?
That's a good question.
Neither of us is super hardcore. I think I'm a bit more of a gamer than you, maybe.
Depends on how you say. I'd say you're more of a video gamer.
Yeah.
But
that's fair.
I do play a lot of, or I have gotten into a lot of the German board games, the German-style board games, the Carcassonne, and that type of thing. And some video games.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing...
Historically,
not that I'm personally that overwhelmed and excited for it, but I'll be interested in seeing an actual playable version of Duke Nukem Forever at this point.
I just played it.
Did you? What'd you think?
Awesome.
Thumbs up? Was it better than, say, Bulletstorm?
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one, because Bulletstorm is kicking ass and taking names.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Bulletstorm. It's fun and it's entertaining. It's a great place filler for Gears. Like, literally, all you have to do is dampen the lights, give it a little bit more scruff, and put a girl in there somewhere, and you've got Gears.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I'm also looking forward to Star Wars Online.
The Old Republic one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of excited about that. It seemed interesting.
Yeah.
Not a long line, though, surprisingly.
No, yeah, you'd think more people would want to be Jedi and stuff. But
yeah.
They all do, but they're just at home waiting for it to happen.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah, just staring into their little lightsaber that they bought off of eBay.
Hey, I have one on my iPhone. I have the app.
Oh.
Me both, sister.
Oh. Yes, I do.
Now, after PAX East this week, what's next? I know you got a new album that you guys just released, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
A year ago is new.
but it is our newest.
It's sort of the new album is still here.
And we have a pretty good slate of shows coming up, traveling. We don't go out for like 3 months at a time like a rock band, so we'll go out over extended weekends. Staying pretty busy. We have a number of projects going.
Yeah, we have a couple of projects that we unfortunately can't really talk about yet that are in various stages of in the works or about to happen kind of thing that are sort of keeping us energized.
Yeah. We're podcasters also.
We are.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about your podcast show.
It is Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes on average.
great title.
Yeah, it doesn't fit neatly into
the
iTunes, but, you know, Paul and Storm podcast for short. And it's pretty much what it sounds like. It's just us. It's very much like if you were in the car with us when we're on a 5-hour drive between City X and City Y, which we drive between a lot. And it's, just kind of a filter of general pop culture, some nostalgic stuff, definitely geeky, but that's just because we're kind of like that, movies, TV, whatever comes to mind.
Yeah.
Kind of like us bastards. We kind of do the same thing with our show. We focus mainly on the pop culture and video games, movies, and Japanese animation, and a little bit of sports thrown in as well, too.
Yeah. Sure, you gotta, have a little bit of grounding in that area.
Yes.
I mean, we don't, but the general, you have to have a grounding of some sort.
Now, Panda, do you have one more question before we move
before
on to the big
you
one?
To your big one?
The big one.
I guess my big question would be, up to date, have any panties been thrown yet?
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds.
Hundreds. When we wrote Opening Band with that line, no panties have been thrown, we sort of looked at each other and said, ha-ha, wouldn't it be funny someday that people would, like, throw panties? And now they do. And it's kind of fun. We used to keep a gallery of thrown panties on the website, except it was starting to draw the wrong kind of traffic to the website.
Yeah, so we stopped adding to the gallery, but when we stopped it was somewhere around like 350-400 panties.
Oh, yeah. And we still save some of the more prime ones to
remember
craft
yes.
with.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, let's do this.
All right, it's time to travel the three-album island. If you were stuck on a deserted island, you two, and you managed to Gilligan's Island a record player, a CD player,
made a record player out of coconuts.
And vine.
And bamboo.
Right, and seawater.
Which three albums would you have on you, and why?
Okay, let's alternate.
Okay, go ahead, you first.
My first is Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. Not because of the ironic title, but just mentally, it has sort of a cheering up effect on me. even though it's kind of dour, you know, to listen to it, but it's almost like you overdose yourself with it, and it just sort of transports me mentally. So if I were stuck on an island, that would be very entertaining.
It's definitely a transportation album, if you, like, especially how it opens up. It feels like you're traveling to some distant planet.
Don't even need to be high. Yeah. So, even if I wasn't on Marijuana Island, and I don't smoke marijuana, so it wouldn't matter if I were. But if that's what you're thinking about Pink Floyd, no, it is the music.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of, too.
My first would be Peter Gabriel's So album, partly because it was the very first compact disc I ever bought, and is sort of one of the gold standard still for me of sort of measuring a system's quality, as you throw on, like, Big Time or some incredibly loud track off that album.
Yeah.
And partly I just really, really love that album, and it was, you know, Peter Gabriel at his prime. So that'd be my number one.
Okay.
I would choose the Beatles, and this might sound heretical to Beatles fans, but there was the Red Album and the Blue Album that were, like, the greatest hits.
Yeah.
And the Red Album was really what, to me, was, like, the first real music that I obsessed over and absorbed completely when I was a kid. It was, like, the only thing in the record collection that wasn't Broadway or Barbra Streisand or something like that. And so, like, those songs helped build my soul, you know, that's part of it. And then also just that sort of the memory of childhood.
My second,
like, that sequence in which they're played.
Right. Yes.
My second album would be the original British concept album of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Ooh.
Not that I am a religious person, but...
But it's a great musical.
It is a great musical. It is wonderfully overwrought and extremely 70s. And I listened to the snot out of it when I was a kid, and now my whole family, like, when we're traveling, it's a great way to kill 70 or 80 minutes, is we'll just pop it on and sing at the tops of our lungs.
What's that, boss? Tell me what's happening.
Exactly,
what's
which
boss?
It is just, it's one of those things, like, if you've grown up listening to it, it's just written into your DNA at that point, and it's just a good sort of everybody hop on board, and there's no way you can sort of overdo it, because it's already so overdone.
Yeah. I used to watch the movie when it was on TV all the time, so... Yeah. I'm a big fan of Jesus Christ Superstar as well.
Yeah.
Third one's tough. There are a lot of albums sort of vying for space for it, and I'd have to talk myself into which one it is. Is it cheating to sort of have that discussion? That's the thing. Is I think it is cheating to have that discussion.
Yeah.
Well, if you have your third.
Well, album. See, the thing is, I'm going to be lame because my third album, which I had thought of before you even said anything, was Pink Floyd's "Wish You Were Here."
Still say that.
Yeah, but this—that is assuming that. I am also
able. That could have been our shared third album.
I could have been. Maybe that's how we'll do it. Because we're also working under the assumption that while building my coconut and bamboo record player, I can also build a coconut, bamboo, and vine headset. Because really, you got to listen to that song in headphones.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole album on headphones.
Especially Welcome to the Machine.
Yeah.
Okay, I have my answer. And it's a guilty pleasure. Again, there are a lot of albums, and I just think to myself, I gotta pick something that's newer, you know. But then I said, screw that, I'm just gonna go with what my gut says. And it is Styx, Grand Illusion. I know, but again,
it's still a good album, though.
It's an awesome album. Like, if you're talking about just good pop rock music,
Dennis DeYoung is a very underappreciated vocalist.
He is, and Tommy Shaw as well. And it was right at their peak before they started to go buckety-buckety apart for various reasons. And Fooling Yourself, Angry Young Man in particular will cheer me up every time. Whereas the Pink Floyd cheers me up in the opposite way, Styx will cheer me up in the very straightforward way.
Excellent.
And I feel that's basically what it comes down to on the desert island. You need something that's going to keep you sane and happy.
Yeah. And that is a very great point.
Yeah. There you have it.
Awesome. Wow. Paul Storm, thank you so much for joining us on the Boston Bass Brigade.
Our pleasure. Yeah, sorry about those asshole Metroid Metal dudes.
What's up with them with a Proto Man gone?
Oh, I know. Such douchebaggery going on around here at PAX East. So again, thank you. And be sure to check them out on their website, paulandstorm.com.
Yeah.
And also their podcast show, Paul Song Talk, about various topics.
Something like that. Just Google Paul Song. Go to PaulSong.com, you'll find it.
We are the opening band. We hope that all of you sign up on our mailing list and buy our disc and t-shirts in black and gray. We are the opening band. And we only got about 25 more minutes left. That's all we get to blow your ass away. We are the opening band. We are the opening band. Hello. Hello. Hello.